Or give us a call at 313-845-9676.
Criminal justice studies are concerned with the preservation of peace, the prevention of crime, and the protection of life and property. A knowledge of the role of criminal justice in our society also serves to emphasize the importance of balancing the needs of society to maintain social order against the need to safeguard individual rights. For more information on the HFCC Associate Degree Program in Criminal Justice, contact the Criminal Justice Department at one of the following numbers: 313-845-6437, 313-845-9714, or 313-845-9859.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And today, our guest is Mr. Clifford Clift. Mr. Clift is a new international director of the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. MUFON is the largest civilian UFO investigative organization in the world dedicated to the scientific study of the UFO phenomenon. And after retiring as a successful businessman in Colorado, Cliff joined MUFON and soon became a board member. He has been instrumental in helping the organization in its everyday function for the past several years. And now he has taken over the reins as the international director. And here to tell us about himself and about MUFON is Mr. Clifford Clift. Welcome to the show, Cliff.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate being on the show with you. I look forward to our conversation.
It's our pleasure indeed. You started as international director then when?
How long January ago? 24th of 2010.
Right to the day, January 24th, 2010.
But who's counting the days?
I hear you. It's been that big of a drudgery, or what?
Oh, no, David, it has been. I'll tell you, I have never been more excited in my life in working with the state directors and the field investigators and all the volunteers. This organization is amazing. The people that are involved with it, hard-working, dedicated commitment to the discovery and fulfillment of our mission statement, the scientific study of UFOs for the benefit of humanity. It's a very big chore, and it's from time to time we have our distractors, which some are going on right now, and they have their opinions, and that's okay. We have a mission statement, and we're laser-focused to make this discovery.
Yeah. Well, without getting too deep into that internal garbage there, do you find there's a lot of politics involved in this organization?
Well, no. Yes and no. No, when I say no, because the board of directors, eight of them, and myself as the international director, we are totally committed to our mission statement. And then we have volunteers who are state directors. And as state directors, I would say 99% of them are doing an excellent job. We had a few that didn't fulfill the desires and ambitions of succeeding of our mission statement succeeding, and they were they either resigned or have been removed. So that kind of politics, yes, does go on.
And then they become disgruntled and say nasty things. And
yes.
Well, such is life. Such is life.
Yes.
But for the most part, well, are most are all MUFON members volunteers, or are they paid?
Yes. We a person can subscribe to our the MUFON Journal, which is the leading journal on UFO activity that's published monthly.
Right.
And it's based on the investigations that we do, a lot of it, and investigations that have happened in the past. We average, we're currently have about 3,000 subscribers. That number varies depending upon the activity of the UFOs and the media coverage. The more media coverage we get, the more subscribers we get. The one thing that remains constantly going up are our field investigators. We started about, MUFON started in 1969 with Walt Andrus and John Schussler. And I think they had maybe 10 field investigators at that time. Since then, we have grown to about 1,000.
Wow.
And because of the 1,000 field investigators, our number just keep going up. And we're getting more and better trained field investigators, and we're getting more and better sighting reports.
1969 is when MUFON started. That's right about the time Project Blue Book said there's nothing to worry about. Go back to sleep. Your Air Force is awake.
Yes, that was very good. Yes, very good.
I like to say it that way.
Yes. That we can all rest comfortably. There is no national security threat to the UFOs.
Right. Now, last month, we had Mr. Robert Hastings on the show, and he talked about the UFOs that have been constantly seen over our nuclear weapons area, our nuclear missiles, our Minuteman missiles, our nuclear storage facilities, and anything having to do with nuclear, including nuclear plants. Now, wouldn't you say that that is a matter of national security?
Yes, to me it is, especially when, for some unknown reason, when a UFO was present, a whole echo flight of, eight was shut down. Pretty amazing. And then when you have the fact that have flown over Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, and other areas, I'm quite certain that the occupants of these craft are very concerned about what we're doing with our nuclear research.
And then you have the detractors that say that Echo Flight Maelstrom Air Force Base never happened. It's all a hoax. What do you say to that?
If people like Hastings and I forgot the other man's name.
Salas?
Yeah, Salas. When both of those gentlemen step forward and put their credentials on the line and their word, I have to believe that that's what happened. There's no reason for them to come out and say something like this unless it happened.
And it's not just those two gentlemen. It's a lot of other guys.
Certainly,
yeah.
Dave.
And government documentation, right from the government files, you know, declassified documentation.
I gave a talk to three service clubs combined, had probably 90 people there. And I was talking about the Salas and Hastings events in Maelstrom, and I had after my talk, I had five members come up to me afterwards and tell me that they were stationed there, at the, their husbands or they were stationed there at that time.
Hmm.
And UFO occurrences were common.
Really?
Very common. And they, it was so common they just quit talking about it because it was, you know, it's like trees out there. You don't talk about trees every day if they're, you see them, but... So,
but did they shut down the missiles?
Nobody indicated
all
to
the
me
time?
that in fact happened. I don't know if they were there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the UFO activity, which supports their claim,
right,
was a common occurrence there.
Well, if they didn't shut down the UFOs, at least they made their presence known. Is that correct?
That would be exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Also, over our nuclear... power plants. I've seen actual video of one hanging around a power plant, and very impressive. I mean, yes, you can do all this crazy stuff on your computer, yada yada, but this, I believe, was not faked.
Yeah, it's there's a great deal of activity all the time over those. I don't know that there is so much now.
Hmm.
Because they may know all they need to know.
Yeah, but don't you think they'd keep tabs on it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yes, they certainly do, Dave.
It's like now, Philip Imbrogno.
Yes, okay, yeah.
He was talking about the, in New York, the Hudson Valley.
Hudson Valley, yes.
Yeah, and the power plant out there where aliens actually came down, came through the walls, and were tinkering with something at, right in front of the astonished human workers. And they said, shoot them. Some guy, some colonel or something said, I don't care what they're, if there are aliens, shoot them. You know?
Yeah.
And now I don't know if they were shot or not, but they were actually inside the nuclear power plant and tinkering with something, and then they found out later that there was a malfunction that with the equipment they didn't notice. Had they not noticed that, had it not been fixed by someone or something, there would have been a meltdown. There would have been another Whoa. Chernobyl here in New York.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
I don't know if you've heard that story.
No, I have not heard that case, Dave. I have not.
Yeah.
But
that was during the time of the Hudson Valley sightings.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I didn't hear that part of the Hudson Valley information. No.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to send you the archive of my show where I interviewed Mr. Imbrogno.
Yes, I would like to hear that.
Yeah, because he did mention it on that. I don't think he was going to mention it. I found this out through another source, and I kind of sprung it on him on the air. And he's like, yeah, that did happen. Because it sounds so fantastic.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And I agree, it does. But if it's the truth, it's the truth, you know?
Yeah, we're getting a lot of people that have now decided that, well, maybe this UFO activity is something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming into MUFON and other organizations looking for more information.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them still can't accept the fact that there might be ETs involved.
Now, I can understand that because even MUFON years ago did not want to acknowledge the abduction phenomena.
Exactly.
They said, yeah, we got UFOs out there, we got these flying saucers, flying discs, whatever you want to call them, but we're not going to go into alien occupants or abductions. And I always say, and my listeners, if they've listened to any shows of mine, will have heard me say, unless they came all this way to put on a air show for us, there's got to be another purpose.
Exactly.
And what would we do if we went to another planet and found an intelligent yet more primitive society? Exactly what they're doing. Get a few samples of the indigenous, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, based on our nature, we'd probably kill them, too.
Yeah. But hopefully, these aliens have, if they can advance that far technologically, hopefully they have advanced morally as well, and they don't want to kill the indigenous, the natives. They just want to take a few samples, see what we're all about.
You're spot on, Dave. MUFON used to be a nuts and bolts organization.
Mm.
And I think over the years we have learned that there are more things involved with this than just the craft out there.
Right.
How did they get to here? Are they interdimensional? They use wormholes? Do they have technology that's more, obviously they do have more advanced technology than we do.
Mm.
And people say, well, they defy the laws of physics. Well, they defy the laws of physics as we know them, but there might be other laws of physics that we don't know about yet.
Yeah.
Therefore, they know that, and they're not defying the laws of physics. They're just more advanced in the understanding of physics than we are.
Right.
And we've got, Jacques Vallée believes that they're interdimensional.
Yeah.
And we have abductions. This is Travis Walton, Betty and Barney Hill, and many others. Great ones that are very significant. So we can't deny that just because we don't understand it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. So we have to be more investigative oriented toward the abductions, cattle mutilations, crop circles, interdimensional time travelers. These may all play a part in what this phenomenon's about.
Yeah, and I've heard the theory of all of these craft are us from the future. What do you think about that?
Maybe it is. The ones that I've seen, if that's what I'm going to look like in the future, I'm a little concerned.
You better take a picture today of yourself.
That's right.
But, you know, you look back at what caveman is supposed to look like, right?
Yeah, well, that's right.
And they still loved each other, you know. You know, he's not perfect, but he's mine, right?
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. So have you ever had your own personal UFO experience?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I've had two, Dave, and that's what probably has kept me interested.
Tell us about that.
Well, back in the early 1950s, 52, 53, the U.S. Air Force had set up what they call a Civilian Ground Observer Corps. And these were people stationed across the United States that were provided with a booth, like a ticket booth or some small thing, 8x10, with a light and a telephone.
Hmm.
They would call the people across the United States and ask them if they would go out and spend 2 hours or 3 hours on an alert and report any aircraft that we spotted. And my grandmother volunteered me for that because I was about 15.
Hmm.
She volunteered me for a lot.
What year was this?
It was 1952 or 53. I believe it was 53.
Okay.
And the Ground Observer Corps was set up primarily because there was such a Cold War going on between Russia and the United States at that time. Each were afraid they were going to bomb the other one.
Right.
So we were in great terror at that time, and we didn't have the radar systems that we have today. So they relied a lot on the Ground Observer Corps, and when we would see aircraft, we'd go in and report. We had pictures on the wall of the Russian aircraft, our aircraft, and whatever else. And so we would report whether or not they were very high, very low, jet, prop, direction, speed, that type of thing. And one night, I was standing out looking to the east on the hill, and there's big full moon, some white fluffy clouds.
Mm.
And I, out of the corner of my right eye, I saw something that got my attention, and I looked up, and it was a round object about the size of the moon, about the same color, and it was going from the southeast to the northwest across the sky in about 10 or 12 seconds. It was not very long.
Oh, my.
Well, this, I still get the chills when I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in immediately and said, "Grandma, there's something out I just saw," and told her about it, and she says, she quizzed me at length, and I said, "That's what I saw." She says, "Well, let's call it in." I still remember our call signs, Bravo Lima Red 1,
mm-hmm.
and I called it in, and I was passed up three ladies to, I believe it was a major, and he said to me, he said, after he interviewed me at length, he said, "Well, that's what we're looking for.
Really?
You can go home." Now, I don't know if he was placating me or if, in fact, it was something we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, since that time, I have been interested. But,
yeah.
You know, as you have a family and you're going to school, basketball and girls were probably more important to me than UFOs in high school.
Sure.
So I proceeded to go in the military and get married, have a job. So the UFOs were on the back burner, but they were still there.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1995, I was getting ready to retire from my real estate career. And so I got involved with MUFON in 1955 and was put on the board of directors then in 2000 and last year then international director. So I've had that keen desire ever since I saw my first one when I was a young lad.
Right. We have to take just a moment here before we tell about the next one, but take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Clifford Clift, who is the international director of the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. I always pronounce it MUFON instead of...
Hey, it's okay. My sister calls me the Muffin Man. So.
Yeah, I've got our chief investigator. God love him, Mr. Gary Golem calls him Muffin. I laugh, but, you know, you got to be careful who you're saying muffin to. What's a muffin? We're the Muffin Man, you know? We investigate UFOs. We're the Muffin Man. Give me a break. Anyway, back to the show, guys and gals. Tell us about, you say you had two experiences. Tell us about the other one.
Well, the other experience, Dave, happened where I live now, east of Greeley, Colorado.
Hmm.
We live in the country on about 20 acres, and about 10 o'clock at night, I usually go outside and walk the dog and look around after the news. And I was staying out there one evening and looking. We have an airport, not a commercial one with commercial jets, but a small airport. And I was looking off toward that, and of course, being out here a mile south of the airport, I see a lot of airplanes, so I understand running lights.
Right.
But this night I was standing there looking off to the northeast, and I saw on the horizon an orange light, and it was quite large. Well, for the horizon, it was quite large, I'll say that.
Mm.
And I thought, well, that's happening because of the atmosphere and how they distort on the horizon.
Mm.
Well, as I was watching it, kept getting closer, and I thought, well, what is that? And it was orange, and it stayed orange as it came. It took about 20 seconds for it to get to me, and it was about the size of a dime, and it was going right over probably a half mile to a mile north of me.
Mm.
And I thought, well, it's a satellite. And then I thought, no, it's not a satellite. They don't go to the west.
Mm.
I thought, and besides that, I got to looking, it was under the clouds. Well, it went right over the top of Greeley, and it was moving, Dave. It looked like it was trying to maintain a specific speed, because it looked, maybe it was distortion with my eyes, but it looked like it kind of slowed up just a little bit, and then it'd speed up a little bit, go a little bit slow up, and then speed up. So It was something that definitely wasn't an aircraft. There were absolutely no running lights. It was round and too low for a satellite. No noise, wasn't a helicopter. So I have nothing else to believe, but I would have to call that a UFO.
Well, definitely. By the true definition of the word,
yeah.
Unidentified flying object, right? But not necessarily an unconventional object, right?
I don't know what conventional type craft this could have been, because it was like 5 or 6 years ago. And we haven't seen anything similar to that. As a matter of fact, we get a lot of reports of orange orbs, which is what that would probably be defined as.
Now, we were getting a lot of reports of orange orbs around the 4th of July, and the way they described them moving very slowly and flickering orangish, there were a lot of Chinese lanterns that they found came to the ground. So I would say a lot of those were Chinese lanterns.
There's people that do attempt to hoax us, cause us problems.
Or, you know, the 4th of July, they're just setting off the Chinese lanterns, not trying to hoax anybody.
Well,
just,
yeah, I see what you mean,
yeah.
But,
that's another thing. What percentage of reports would you say are actual hoaxes, somebody trying to hoax us?
Oh, I would probably say maybe 5%.
That much?
Yeah, at the most. We average 500 sighting reports a month to MUFON, and of that 400 of them, we can usually define as to what they are. They're usually something planetary, astronomical, black ops, craft, St. Elmo's lights, that type of thing. Or then we've got that other 100 that probably 50 of those would probably, if we had more information, could maybe, I say, be defined as something natural. But I'm telling you, boy, there's 25 to 50 a month that are just are hair-raising. And Dave, of that, that 100 we can't explain, we usually average about 13 or 14 landings and or within 100 feet of the object.
And within 100 feet?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or a landing that they're, yeah. And then of that, there's probably, we average about 3 reports of entities on the ground.
They actually see the entities?
Yes.
And they're not abducted, or are they abducted at the time?
No, not necessarily. In our investigation, we discover they don't have missing time or any residual effects from the sighting.
Okay, so say you get this report from someone who says this thing landed, it was 150 feet from me, and these alien-like beings got out of the craft, I saw them. How do you know they're not hoaxing you?
Well, if we can do the investigation, we can determine through our investigative techniques if they're telling the truth. Obviously, the ones that have 3 or 4 witnesses or more and are very credible in their description and very intelligent in their conversations, they probably are the ones that we can rely on. I don't know if you've heard about the one or not that happened to Chase Kloetsky, our STAR team manager. And I don't know. The STAR team is a group of people that deploy on Category 3 cases. Category 3 cases are the cases that include a very close encounter and or landing, that type of thing.
Okay.
And these people have all they're volunteers again, and they've bought all the equipment to do this, which includes Geiger counters, electromagnetic equipment, Gauss meters, just all kinds of tools, black lights, and...
At their own expense.
At their own expense, yeah.
Well, dedicated.
Yeah, very dedicated. Well, Chase is our. She has a tremendous background in. She deployed Marines to Afghanistan for the Department of Defense, and she just has credentials that are amazing. And she's an extremely good organizer. So the STAR team was developed with her as the manager. The reason I'm telling you this is because she was a witness to an entity.
Really?
Happened in Tennessee about 6-8 months ago. Chase was getting these phone calls from this farmer in a small, businessman farmer in a small town in Tennessee. And he kept saying, there's lights over my field, cornfield at night. Well, it's hard to make any discovery as to what lights are.
All right.
So she was a little hesitant to go out there, but he called and was persistent. So she said, okay, we'll come out. So she got a another field investigator and met the farmer out there at night. And they went out to the field, and Chase set up her infrared camcorder, digital cameras, and had all of her equipment there. She get it all, just about had it all set up, and he says, well, here they come. And sure enough, here come these red lights and orange and yellow lights. Well, as they stood there in amazement to see them, one of the three lights, which turned out to be a triangular craft, came right over the top of them, very slow, very low, under 500 feet, very large, no sound. And as she stood there in amazement, then she realized, I better take pictures. She went over, and all of her batteries were dead in her camera, which is not uncommon.
No, not at all, yeah.
With close encounters, there's some type of electromagnetic field that is present there, and batteries don't seem to work.
Right.
So that upset her, and then this craft just took off. And so they thought, well, they watched for a while. Nothing else happened, and they started to pick up their equipment to take it, put it in the back of the pickup. As they were doing so, Chase had this overwhelming feeling of fear and dread. Not like, you know, when somebody's watching you, you think, ooh, somebody's watching me, it's dark out here, type
thing. Right, right.
But this was more than that, as if it was something that was external. After the fact that she determined that. So she turned to the other guys, and the other lady and the farmer, and said, do you guys feel this sense of dread, this fear that's going on? And they just turned around to look behind them, and there within, I don't know, it was 10 feet or 25 feet, was this 3.5-foot being standing there looking at them.
Really?
That really triggered the fear factor and the fight or flight fear. So they took off. They that scared them. They jumped in the pickup and took off. And, of course, they were laughing hysterically at their stupidity of running. But they go back to the farmhouse, and they said, whoops, we're investigators. Let's go back and do this. So
now, was a farmer, farm owner with them at the time?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so he wasn't an investigator.
No, he was not an investigator. He called MUFON to come and investigate.
Right, okay.
So he said, I told you guys, there's something going on out here, and this has been going on for, I don't know how long, quite a few days.
Wow.
And then when they got back to the field, Dave, they started looking for more UFOs or entities or whatever, and they didn't find anything. They did see the lights had moved from the cornfield over into some trees that were moving around in that area. Now, this story, if it hadn't had three witnesses and a top-notch investigator and our STAR team leader, if it hadn't happened to them, I would have my tongue in my cheek on this one. But with the credibility of the witnesses and the events as they unfolded and what happened, this is a very credible incident.
Yeah. Now, when you said the batteries died, now I can just hear the skeptic/debunker out there saying, oh, sure, that's why they didn't get pictures. Their batteries died. But, you know, it has been shown that whether you're skeptical or not, you go out into a crop formation, a genuine crop formation that you know has not been man-made. and the batteries in your camera die. They literally die.
And well, you know, I don't know that I should have said that Chase's batteries died. They quit working because as the craft left, then everything started working again.
Oh, it did. It kind of like the cars, right?
Yes, exactly. Right.
And that's another thing that in the close proximity of a UFO, your car will die. Now, I've had cars die on me before. I'm sure you have.
Yep.
But they will not start again without human intervention. At least, you know, I'm no mechanic, but to my way of thinking, they will not restart without some kind of human intervention.
That's right. And but, they used to, let me tell you a story about, if we have time, it's all right.
Oh, please.
I have a very good friend that I have known for 40 years that didn't tell me this story until about 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and he used to work in the oil field as a logging engineer. They would drop equipment down the drill hole
mm-hmm.
to see what the formations were like and that type of thing.
All right.
It was about midnight, and he was out on the location, had his truck rigged up and everything ready to go. They had pulled all the drill pipe out of the hole and had it standing in the derrick. And he was in bed waiting for him to wake him up. He was going to go to sleep. And, of course, around a drilling rig, and having worked in the oil field, it's very noisy. They had three huge Jimmy diesel engines that run that big, heavy equipment.
Mm.
He said, all of a sudden, it got quiet, and everything turned blue.
Turned blue.
So he got up to see what was going on. There was no generators running, no diesel engines running, no lights, but it was the blue light from above was shining down on them. And they stood there for about 10 minutes talking to each other, wondering what was going on. The light went out, and those three diesel engines started by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody that knows diesel engines know that when they shut down, you don't start them back up without a lot of problems and a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
So he said it was absolutely amazing. Nobody talked about it. Nobody did anything. And he says, even to this day, he says, it gives me goose pimples to think what was going on.
Nobody talked about it or did anything. What does that mean, though?
Pardon me?
You say nobody talked about it or did anything about
it. Yeah, they did. They just stood around and looked like they were all in a daze, just like they were all in a shutdown mode.
Yeah, yeah. Did they feel confusion during that time?
No.
No.
Nope, they just were.
Very often it's reported that when a UFO is overhead, and I found this is true, kind of true in my incident when I had my sighting, is that you just feel like total confusion, disconnected with the world. You're in your own time zone, you know?
Yeah, well, I think that's what he was saying. He never expressed confusion, but he said it was kind of like we were all not even interested. We were just wondering what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I know that feeling well, unfortunately, but that's I say unfortunately, but then fortunately I can say that yeah, I know that this is a true phenomenon. I can, you know, I hear a lot of stuff that may or may not be hoaxes. But you know, It keeps me going when I want to say there's so many hoaxes involved in this and skeptics involved in this and debunkers and people trying to stir up the pot and confuse you with disinformation that I just want to throw up my hands and say I don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, wait a minute, remember what happened back then? I know it's true. I can't prove it to you. I can't prove it to our listeners, but I know it's true.
Right.
And with that, I'm going to take one more break to remind our listeners that you're listening to, WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with International Director of the Mutual UFO Network, Mr. Clifford Clift. And he's told us about two of his two sightings and other very, very fascinating stories. Now, this gal that, what's her name again? That was in
Chase Plowetsky.
In Tennessee.
Yes, she's our manager of our star team.
Oh, okay. Now, the star team, what is that exactly?
Well, the star team originated after the BAS program. We had a, MUFON had a contract with Mr. Bigelow, with Bigelow Aerospace, for 1 year that ended last January 30th in 2010.
The Robert T. Bigelow?
Yes. Yes.
I knew that. I'm just being facetious.
Yeah, well, with that, we developed a star team where we could deploy rapidly, and the funding that he gave us paid for the investigators to go out and to do the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And he we allowed him access to our case management system, our CMS, for the funds that he gave us so that he could evaluate the various sightings.
Mm.
Well, the star team then, after the project closed, Chase Kolesky and Chuck Reaver and some others put together another star team for just MUFON, all volunteers. And on Category 3s, they'll go to a state that has had the event, and these people have all the equipment of their own. They can deploy within usually 24 to 48 hours, and they have to have a certain amount of investigations, I believe it's 15, under their belt before the state director can appoint them to the star team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these star team members, I think we're up to about 50 now or more, that have volunteered to do this. Amazing.
Right, right, right.
And all the work that Chase has done in putting it together, and Chuck Reaver, all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Just pretty exciting. So
yes.
These people, we get a Category 3, say, in Michigan. And the state director and whoever the chief field investigator is, if they're involved, they get in contact with the star team manager. The star team manager gets in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the primary investigator from that state and the star team people then deploy immediately to, as soon as possible, I shouldn't say immediately, as soon as possible to get to the witnesses and to pick up samples and whatever the things that we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the star team is an assistance group to states with, so many states don't have, Dave, field investigators. Again, they're all volunteers that can just drop their work or their families and go.
Right, right.
So it's difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to maintain the integrity of the sighting, we need to get on it. So we work in conjunction, the star team works in conjunction with the state director and the primary field investigator.
Right. So actual scientific equipment and is being involved in these investigations.
When the star team's called,
right.
And honestly, many of the regular field investigators have a lot of the same equipment.
Right. But sometimes, like you say, these lights in the sky, I saw something, I saw this, and it was there and it was gone. You know, what kind of scientific equipment can you use to verify that? You just take the report and see if, you know, two or three people from different vantage points turn in the same report, correct?
Right, right. We have what we call Category 1, 2, and 3 now.
Mm-hmm.
Category 1 are the lights in the sky.
Nah.
Not a lot we can do about it.
No.
Category 2 is closer proximity, multiple witnesses, that type of thing. Category 3 are the landings, the close encounters,
mm-hmm.
that type of thing.
Okay.
So the STAR team usually only deploys on the Category 3.
Okay. So, say someone here in Michigan or any place in the sound of my voice, someone witnesses something that they feel is anomalous in the sky and wants to file a report. Now, take us through the process of that.
Well, people file their reports with MUFON. All they have to, or if they want to, they just go to our website. It's called www.mufon.com. And there's a place there that says report a sighting.
Mm.
They fill that out. It goes into our case management system. And we've got, excuse me, we probably have five people that are looking at that 24/7. So if we do get a Category 3, we can get a hold of the right people, the state director or the field investigator that's involved, and get everybody out and going.
Right. So you just go to MUFON.com and file a report?
That's right.
File a report, right?
Yep.
And tell us about the symposiums in MUFON symposiums in Colorado.
Well, you know, Dave, the last time I think I saw you was in Dearborn, Michigan at the symposium.
Was 2003, right?
Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's been a few years. But
it has. Well, I've been in Denver since.
Oh, have you? Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't see you.
I was hiding.
Okay. You were stealth.
I had a vendor's table for one thing.
I do too remember now.
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry.
There you go. But
our symposium this year is the end of July in Irvine, California.
Oh, it's in California.
We've got some tremendous lineup. We will have that up and running on our website.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we're really pleased with at this time, Story Musgrave, the astronaut, is going to be our keynote speaker.
Hmm.
And we think that will, there's some of the astronauts that are coming out with some amazing things. I was just on TV last night in South Carolina on a news interview that included Charlie Bowen, Charles is the director of the NASA.
Okay.
And Edgar Mitchell was there, and then they had me on, too.
Uh-huh.
So the three of us were on there for a while, and the astronauts, of course, Edgar Mitchell and Gordon Cooper, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Story Musgrave, and Cernan, and they all believe that there's something out there besides us.
Right. Well, we've had Edgar Mitchell on the show. That's the only astronaut we've had on the show. But Mitchell does not claim to have a UFO sighting.
No, he has not.
Buzz Aldrin has, and I guess Musgrave has as well.
Well, and Gordon Cooper.
Definitely Gordon Cooper.
Yes.
But not in space. Gordon Cooper did not see it in space.
No.
He was on land, and he saw the thing land on the ground. And
Edwards Air Force Base.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was the closest he got. He also, I believe, chased him in a plane.
In 1952, when he was a jet pilot stationed in Germany.
Right. Just like George Feil, just like a lot of them.
Yes.
Oh, a lot of pilots have chased them, and some of them did not come back to tell the tale as well.
That's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, so they kind of pulled back on that chase them business.
Shoot them down.
Yeah. Shoot them down. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Yeah, shoot bow and arrows at somebody with atomic weapons, you know.
So. I had the occasion to talk to a Russian cosmonaut who was a jet pilot, and this was back in the early days, too, in the 50s, and he was told that he was to shoot him down, and he said, yeah, right. He said, there was no way I was going to shoot at one of those, to even try to shoot it down. He said, the ones that did never came back.
That's it. Yeah. So when are we going to have a symposium here in Michigan again? We had a very successful one in 2003.
Yes. We did, I think it was 4 or 5 in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we did it, we thought it might be able to be more of a center location and bring continuity and help us to be able to better get people in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to design and define the criterion for the symposium by doing it that way. So this year, it's going to be in Irvine, California, Southern California, and then the following year, it's going to be just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, and on the Kentucky side of the river.
Ah, that's good. That's great that you start moving around again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's important that we do that.
Yeah, because other people in other parts of the country say, well, you know, I'd like to go to the symposium, but it's all the way across the country. I'm not going. It's in Denver. I'm not going. But, boy, if it's that close, I'd certainly show up.
Yeah, so that'll be good. And then hopefully we'll get one maybe in the southeast after that and Midwest, and then just keep moving them around again.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget Dearborn, Michigan now.
And Dearborn, Michigan will probably be on the agenda.
Okay. That's good. That's good. I spoke when we were in Dearborn.
Yes, you did.
I did.
About the Fatima, or whatever.
Well, no, somebody in the audience brought up Fatima, but mine was on biblical UFOs.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Okay.
But there was a guy in the audience that was wanted the world to know that Fatima was a UFO event. And I said, thank you very much, and he continued to speak.
So, yes.
Sit down, sir.
Yes.
But at any rate, I may well agree with them, but what about these dead fish and birds that are coming?
I don't know about the dead fish. I did. I'll tell you what I have discovered in communication with people.
Hmm.
I talked to a scientist, an engineer that retired from Los Alamos.
Okay.
And when he read, I know him personally. And when he read that article, the first thing he said, he says it's HAARP, H-A-A-R-P.
Hmm.
He indicated to me that the Star Wars program has now developed the HAARP technology, which thinks it may have gotten out of control.
Hmm.
They were shooting down harmonic rays onto the ground, and maybe they missed a place or they did something, but this... according to some of the ornithologists that have evaluated the corpses of these dead birds, said it was a blunt trauma death. Well, they could have flown into whatever this was.
Are you saying like sound waves or something?
Yes.
Ah.
So
that could have been that blunt of an object, a sound wave.
Well, apparently the technology with the HAARP and the harmonic, I'm not scientist enough to even talk intelligently about what it does or doesn't do, but it seems it like to puts up an invisible barrier of some type.
Oh, okay.
That something as small as a bird or a fish can't get through.
Yeah.
And if they're, I don't know about the fish swimming into it and dying. That doesn't make sense.
Well, you don't know.
Yeah.
It happened about the same time, so coincidence? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
it makes you wonder.
But, you know, people are blaming a lot of things on this HAARP technology, like Katrina, and, we had a hurricane, and they're even saying that HAARP prevented a hurricane from hitting the... East Coast the very next year. So I don't get it.
I don't either. I don't understand it. And it may be very insignificant what I'm talking about and may not even be true. That was the opinion of one person that worked on the HAARP project at Los Alamos.
Well, You don't know. You don't know. I mean, you know, if HAARP is in existence, it must have some kind of function.
Yeah.
You know, and unless it's not working at all, why? If it's not working, why don't they abandon it?
Exactly.
It's like these chemtrails they talk about. I'm not a big believer in chemtrails. They are contrails, and yes, they're chemicals that are coming out of the airplane, but in certain weather conditions, these crystallize and hang around in the atmosphere for a while.
Yeah, the colder and the more moisture in the upper atmosphere, the bigger and longer the contrail.
That's right, and the longer it remains. And I, you know, some people go off the deep end and they say, well, gee, they're trying to control our minds. Well, control us what, to be all of one religion? all of one political persuasion? It doesn't seem to be working. Give it up.
Right.
Prevent crime? Oh, well, empty out the prisons. You know, give me a break. So,
yeah,
anyway.
I agree.
And a quick question here now. This recent temple dome in Jerusalem, this UFO that came down and hovered over the temple dome and then shot right up. What do you think about this?
Well, our photo analysts, which we have on board with us.
Hmm?
The first couple of videos, they feel probably are not anything UFO oriented.
Hmm.
The third and fourth one, the definition's still out as to what it would be.
Really?
But they it does seem to be there might be something.
Well, when I first saw the first one, I thought, you know, this can be done with a computer, of course, but if there's got to be a lot of people that saw it from other vantage points. Let's wait and see if we hear from that. And then other vantage points came out. So I said, interesting.
Yeah. So maybe there's something to this one. We don't know for sure until we, you know, that's the sad part about it. People will call us right after an event and want to know what it is. Well, until we complete our investigation and have everything vetted, we can't release that information. So it might be 3 days, it might be 3 weeks, it might even be a month till we get lab results back.
Right.
If there's happened. So wish we could be quicker in defining what it is, but science doesn't work in a minute or two.
Right. Okay, once again, if anybody wants to file a UFO report, where do they go?
They go to www.mufon.com and report a sighting.
Hmm?
And that's where they can also become a subscriber to our monthly journal.
Okay.
With all the latest information. And then once they're a subscriber, they can apply for becoming a field investigator. And we always need field investigators.
I'll tell you what, if anybody has any interest in the UFO phenomenon at all, this monthly MUFON journal is the thing to get, because it keeps you up to date on the UFO phenomenon. And scientifically speaking, not just crazy off-the-wall stories. And if they are off-the-wall stories, MUFON will let you know. Am I right?
That's correct, David.
Mr. Clifford Cliff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, David. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you, and much luck to you and your endeavors.
Well, thank you, and to you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.fm's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.fm, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Magic Notebook. Yeah. Oh, good. All right. Well, you're listening to me, Jimmy, your favorite non-resident spaceman, floating in a tin can. This is WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 FM, or if you are lucky enough, fortunate even, to listen across the internet, this is WHFR.FM. Because I'm one to do, and it's what I like. Give a shout out to all the patron saint of Lost Spaceman, Mr. David Bowie. Here is a Bowie cover. Unfortunately, you can't always find the actual Bowie. And this is Matthew Dear covering Sound and Vision.